Once, I saved 3 billion lives. But I couldn't save my son. A machine took him from me. And I am terminated.
Welcome to Exposition Street, celebrating geek movies in all their splendiferous glory and a presentation of Prismatic Tsunami. Welcome to yet another fine show, and we have a absolutely fascinating selection for you this week. You got a little bit of a taste there, so you probably already know what we're getting into, and we are definitely getting into it. I've got a great panel with me today. My name is Eric. Thank you very much for joining us for the show. If there is, at any point, any recommendations you'd like to make to the show, any notes on, we don't take notes, commentary. No, we kind of do commentary. If you'd like to review, anyway, feedback at prismatictsunami.com is the best way to do it. Or you can drop by our Discord server and talk to us there. Either way, we're happy to hear from you, so please do that. I'm going to go ahead and introduce the panel. I think everybody looks ready. Don't worry, he definitely needs physical contact to copy you. It's Richard.
I'll beatbox.
Bang it.
I didn't stick it.
You tried.
She's not a machine. She's augmented. It's Vanessa.
Isn't everybody?
Yes. He was sent from the future to steal your bacon. It's Jason.
Yes. I'm okay with that.
You're good with that one? And doesn't everybody keep their phone in a bag of potato chips? It's the kid.
I'm back.
I knew it. Just as a warning, this is an R-rated movie. We won't necessarily go out of our way to make an R-rated show, but we can't promise we're going to absolutely avoid it. I do think I managed to avoid it in the clips, which was actually pretty impressive. Just saying.
I mean, I am topless.
Well, yeah, but it's not a video show anymore. So.
Oh, okay.
We're good.
Plus, you're not Vanessa.
It's true.
Yeah, that's right, because women's are different.
Apparently, yeah. in the eyes of society, particularly. Let's see. This week we're doing Terminator Dark Fate. This movie is now, I think, if I'm not mistaken, our most recent movie on the show. You know, we're 38 episodes into Exposition Street. This one came out on November 1st of 2019.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we noted that.
So,
I was really surprised to see a movie this young on the list.
I felt like it was an interesting one to tackle because it was broadly panned, but...
Oh, that's a shocker.
The results are really mixed, and a lot of the fans love it, and a lot of the fans hate it, which made it a fun show to do. So, that's, you know, fair. If it had been a straight-up success and it was that recent, I probably wouldn't have bothered, but it was a mixed result, mixed bag. Rated R, like I said. When it came out in November of 2019, it topped the box office, number one, $29 million, runtime of 2 hours and 8 minutes. An augmented human and Sarah Connor, full stop, must stop an advanced liquid Terminator from hunting down a young girl whose fate is critical to the human race. Not inaccurate, but also not well written. Just putting that out there.
Was that, IMDb?
From IMDb? Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah.
I probably should have taken the time to look for other blurbs, but you know.
I mean,
yeah, but we always use the IMDb blurb, and we get to make fun of them that way.
Occasionally, I'll find another one somewhere, and I will include it as well. I know I've done that once or twice, but yeah, it's usually as long as I got one to laugh at.
Pay for again. It. Those are written by people for free.
That's probably true.
I mean, it's not wrong.
It's not wrong. It is not wrong.
Directed by Tim Miller. We know him from Deadpool. That's about it.
Okay, that does say some things.
Yeah, Tim's a little newer on the scene. Written by, it had like a few writers listed because there were writes and rewrites and rewrites. David S. Goyer took a pass at it. He's responsible for like the Blade movies, Nolan's Batman stuff, Dark City. Justin Rhodes, whose only credit that I saw at all was like RoboCop Returns, which has been announced, but hasn't, you know, they don't know exactly when it's coming out or anything. And Billy Ray, who did like the Hunger Games stuff, Gemini Man, and is the brain behind Earth 2, the series back in the 90s, which I absolutely loved. So
that explains why the movie place wanted me to watch Gemini Man after I watched Dark Fate.
Could be. I actually watched Gemini Man recently. I finally got around to it. I've been that one kept on kind of sitting on my plate cold for a long time. It's like, I wasn't
still
super
wanting
excited
to get to it.
But, you know, it was entertaining. Yeah. It was all right. You know,
it's on our list, so I haven't watched it because.
Oh, I didn't realize. That's even more recent than this.
Yeah.
Let's see. Music by Junkie XL, otherwise known as Tom Hulkenborg. Music was great. This guy did Alita Battle Angel, the Mortal Engines movie around the same time, the Deadpool movies, Fury Road, Batman v Superman, and Zack Snyder's remake of his own that wasn't his own movie, Justice League. I mean, he's done a lot of junk, and is really good at the thematic, sweeping, dramatic stuff. So I was fine with it. And obviously, he was, you know, in here borrowing a lot from like Brad Fidel's original, you know, Terminator.
Oh, really?
You don't themes say. And stuff. I recognized a few of them that might have captured a little bit of it here and there. Starring in her first top billing role, Linda Hamilton. This is her first top billing movie, but of course, in every previous Terminator movie that she was in, Arnold Schwarzenegger had the top billing name, and he gave it to her this time.
Oh,
so Arnold was listed as second.
How modern.
And Arnold was 71 when he shot this movie, when he began filming, and 36 when he did the original Terminator in 84. So, and you know,
it doesn't look like that much of a difference.
Not huge, no. I mean, he does have the older thing going with the gray.
Yeah, but he doesn't look 40 years older.
No. No, I'll buy that. You can kind of put them side by side ish sometimes because there are, you know, body doubles that have a very young Arnold look to them that are used in shots where they put young Arnold's face on them.
Like that other Terminator movie that I don't want to talk about.
You could tell the Terminator's been through a number of things over the years.
Well, they did it with this one too.
Yeah.
In that early shot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was okay with that in this movie. The other movie, I don't want to. It was
the
bad.
The Execution of John Connor.
Oh my gosh.
Oh.
Edward Furlong. He really would have loved to do a little more. Apparently, that didn't work out so much. It's funny because when they were pushing it, they're promoting the movie, they would like, and the return of Edward Furlong. It's like, what? but he wasn't in any, now we know why. He wasn't in any of the promos. He wasn't in any of the advertising. He wasn't doing any of the marketing out there.
They called that the return of Edward Furlong?
Well, they're just saying that he was reprising his role in the movie. Technically, that's true. They did some de-aging on him and he reprised his role for 12 seconds in the movie. Wow.
A foggy shot that didn't even really get his face clear. He
got to make the face.
You got to do the face.
He got to do the face.
You got to do the face.
Yeah, he got to make the face.
Not that face. Not the Home Alone face.
The Home Alone face. Sorry.
Wrong face. Wrong child star done wrong. You know, though, I like Macaulay, though. He's got his own podcast now. He's pretty cool.
Macaulay's coming around.
Yeah, good stuff. I mean, he's been through some shit, though.
Haven't we all?
Well, you guys are on it. Mackenzie Davis played Grace.
I loved her.
She's awesome.
I like tried Ooh. To go back and look at her other stuff.
I was
like,
say, who is she?
She was in Black Mirror in one episode.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I recognized.
She was
hoping to see more of her.
She was in The Martian.
How much more of her can you see?
She was in The Martian. She played a NASA geek in The Martian, which was in 2015.
See, I don't remember her in The Martian, but pretty much all I remember that is Matt Damon.
Right.
I didn't see that one.
And
you should.
Blade Runner 2049, which in which case she played it. Well, I better not say because that's spoiler for a different movie entirely.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean that was so she's just kind of coming out on the scene right now in the last, you know, 4, 5, 6 years, and really this was a great performance. I thought she was fantastic. Probably a better performance than Natalia Reyes, who played Dani Ramos. She had some great moments, but a lot of times I was struggling a little bit with how genuine the performance was.
For the type of character that she was playing, I don't think she did bad.
I was looking through her IMDb. She did a lot of stuff for, if I'm thinking of the right person, she had a lot of credits in Spanish speaking films.
Yeah.
I can see that.
So
yeah, I don't remember seeing anything else I recognized, but I wanted to make sure and get her name
still
down.
An impressive list, and I could see why they picked her in this situation.
And I do like the contrast between her performance at the start of the movie and her performance at the end.
Oh, she definitely actually was dynamic.
The arc is
the growth was real.
I was going to say I felt like her two best scenes were the
the normal life at the very beginning when you first meet her, and then her scene from the future when it's revealed that she's the one who saved.
Yeah, so good.
Those were great.
She did a really good job at that. Because it also seemed so like odd when she comes in that when they're doing the flashback/forward when Grace is talking about her. And she comes through that break in the wall or whatever, and with the hair all kind of, you know, tied back and looking all tough, but she's all still only like, you know, 5'2" and 83 pounds. I was like, and somehow she pulled it off though, and she seemed tough.
It was good.
Really good.
Loved it.
So yeah, I'd like to see what else she does. See what's here, anything else down the line. Gabriel Luna, I really like this guy. He played the Rev 9. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And the only other place I know him from is he was an entire season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as Ghost Rider.
That was...
What a performance.
Really?
Yeah.
And he was really good in that, too.
That's where I know. That's where I recognize him from. So, yeah, it's good stuff. I mean, there was a couple of seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that were really good. They were in the middle.
A little after that, I fell out of watching it, but that kept me watching it for a lot longer than I would have.
Yeah, I liked that version of Ghost Rider. He had the muscle car instead of the... I can't remember what he drove, but it was a big black car.
Nice.
Cool. That version was better than the... Oh, wait, we don't want to talk about that.
We don't talk about the cage fella. Yeah.
Except, I would love to talk about the cage fella.
You want to do that? You want to do one of those Ghost Rider movies?
Just the first one. We don't have to do the second
one. I never saw the second one, so the second one actually would make more sense because I never saw it. But then again, I have fear that I never saw it because it was truly that terrible.
There's a reason I finally got around to watching the second one.
I finally got around to watching the second one, and I really want to take it back.
Yeah.
Wow. I feel a consensus coming on.
And then again, my favorite thing about the first one was Sam Elliott. So,
ding, ding, ding. We have a winner.
That's fair.
MVC.
And Diego Boneta. I mentioned him only because the only place I knew him, he played Diego Ramos. The only place I knew him from, the brother, was as Drew in Rock of Ages. He played the lead role in Rock of Ages.
Yeah. Which, as long as he's in the movie, he was great.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't very long, was it?
And he went out with a bang.
Ooh. $185 million budget. Not surprised there. Actually, almost kind of surprising it was that low. $29 million opening weekend. In the U.S., it grossed $62.2 million. Cumulative worldwide was $261 million. So it probably didn't really make them a ton of money, but it wasn't a flop either. So, you know. During filming... I loved this little bit, and I just wanted to make sure I remembered to mention it. The director had to keep telling Linda to stop smiling when she was firing guns.
It's a thing.
I love it.
I do, too. That's awesome.
I'm okay with that.
I'm totally cool with that. That's great.
So she was the selling point on this film, right? We get another Terminator with Linda Hamilton as Sarah Connor, 100 years later here. We get to see Linda Hamilton in that tough, badass role that made her an icon, like the Sigourney Weavers, like, you know, one of these female action hero kind of characters that we didn't get enough of because it went too fast. Terminator 2 was this megalithic, huge, monstrous hit success in 1991 or 2 or whatever it came out. And then what else did she do? I mean, I didn't literally stop to look it up because she seemed like, it was like her and Arnie was like, I often will talk about the actors, what they've done, what we know them from, or where they were in their career. We freaking know. I mean, I don't have to sit here and talk about Arnold Schwarzenegger's career. If you're listening to the show and you don't know what Arnie was in, well, I guess you might be really young. California. I guess you might be really young, actually.
He had a starring role in California for a while.
Linda was, she was something else. This was super exciting to see her back at this. And I really loved and hated her performance. And when I say I hated it, it was because some of it was so raw. She's really good. Some of it was so raw that it was uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when she was dealing with all that internal pain and trying to express it and deal with it. I loved the line. I don't even think I caught it because a lot of her stuff was kind of because her performance was the character was kind of flat. So the performance in audio comes off kind of flat. So it's not that interesting to listen to. But some of the things like when she said, "I that's what I do. I kill Terminators and I
get blackout drunk.
Gonna get blackout drunk." It was like, wow, this really tells the story of a life well lived. This is not somebody I want to spend more time with.
At the very beginning of the movie, she says she was terminated. This is someone that's already given up on their life.
Yes. And when he tells her that he did it to give her purpose, it's like, well, you know, that actually kind of rings true.
Yeah.
Not that that was your right, bucko, but it seemed to work.
No, she said, I will be back first.
Mm-hmm. He never said he was going to be back.
Yeah, she said, I will be back. He said he won't be back.
That was a cool callback. That was
it
great.
Was.
It was very touching.
I mean, there's so much you can do, and there was a lot of little things like that. I remember the trivia on this movie, by the way, is pretty much the largest trivia section I've ever seen on a website before.
I need to look it up.
I could have spent an hour just reading through it.
Jeez.
It's stupid. But the point of it is that there's so many things that are just hard-baked into the legacy that this movie carries. We have had a string of not great and consequentially not well-received Terminator failures. Mm-hmm. Terminator 3 was ostensibly not a good freaking movie. Terminator Salvation, there are people that love the movie, but it wasn't a very good Terminator movie. It was. It needed to be something complete. They should have just taken the Terminators out of it, made it some completely unique sci-fi epic. Would have been a better movie. You wouldn't have as much of, you know, CGI naked Arnie running around, but you know.
Can we not talk about Genesis, please?
Oh, what's that?
Thank you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And there was
I genuinely don't know what you're talking about. I stopped watching it too.
And,
it's bad. Don't bother.
And I've seen them all. I mean, I have seen them all. And I watched the Sarah Connor Chronicles when it was on TV.
Now that.
It was lovely.
I watched some of it, and I just, there's a while I got tuned out, despite the fact that Summer Glau was awesome. Summer Glau.
Yeah, well, that's what got me into it, too.
Yeah, she's what brought me there.
And then I got to know Lena Headey because of it. Lena Headey. And, of course, you know, I've loved everything she's done since. So I want to say I didn't have huge expectations for this going in, but they were promoting it right. At Comic-Con, before this was released in November of 2019, at Comic-Con, they had Linda Hamilton and Arnie Schwarzenegger and the new cast there. James Cameron was involved with the film. He directed the first two. And when he decided to produce this one, he didn't want to direct it himself, but he did decide to produce a Terminator film as long as he could sequelize his first two movies and kind of ignore everything else. The gift of the Terminator lore is that you can kind of ignore everything you want to.
Yep.
It's a time thing, but it's screwy.
Oh, God, is it screwy.
Okay, so.
Very paradoxy.
I'm not one of these people, okay? Just to preface this. I'm a bad nerd this way because I do not actually get into this sort of like argument, like the lack of consistency in time travel mechanics internally. Even this one had a glaring one that just hit me hard. And I get that at some level, all they're doing is trying to write around the drama they want to create. And I'm okay with that. But when we look at the history of the stories of the when we look at the Terminator franchise from the start, Sarah Connor is targeted because her son, John, is going to be the savior of the human race, right? They lead the resistance against the machines, right? So presumably this would happen because she had John. John grew up to be this thing. The robots decided to send somebody back in time to stop John from being born. But because it was Kyle who was John's dad, Kyle was sent back. I'm explaining the freaking plot of the first movie at this point. But it's only to illustrate a point, right? If Kyle had ever been sent back, then John never would have been born, et cetera, et cetera. Self-fulfilling prophecy, but all of it was the entire event, everything that landed in that space, was internally consistent as long as everything happened, right? There was no point at which John Connor was going to grow up and be the savior of mankind if Kyle hadn't gone back in time to stop the Terminator that was sent back in time to kill Sarah, right? Because Kyle was dead. So then they stop at the end of Terminator 2, they stop the Skynet thing from happening. Right. And we now know that was successful. Skynet didn't happen.
Right.
And we'll get to the all for nothing trope here in a minute. Skynet didn't happen. Yet there were still Terminators that had been sent back before they did what they did that stopped the future from ever happening that were carrying out their mission, which is how John gets killed.
Right.
So then this becomes a set of events that occurs in a place where when you change the future, it doesn't change what's already happened in the future prior to the point at what?
Right.
Right. Big paradox. Big paradox.
It's just a truncated timeline. It's not necessarily a paradox.
You're a truncated timeline.
I'm probably many truncated timelines, but we don't need to talk about that.
We do not discuss it with outsiders.
As long as you accept the parallel timelines, this movie's great.
But parallel timelines don't work in the initial instance.
It doesn't, but it has to be accepted for this one. Otherwise, it doesn't work.
I was still okay with it because at the end of the day, if you're going to nitpick every movie, you're never going to have a movie that meets up to your standards.
I hope you're paying attention, Jason.
I'm just saying.
I don't
That's the one thing you have to accept for this movie to be enjoyable.
I feel attacked.
And I had to look for that, to be honest, because I don't have these issues. I don't mind internal inconsistencies if the story's great. So this is one of those things where I was kind of like, I'm trying to be better at being a agent for the audience in this situation and go, here's a glaring problem I think I saw, put that to the panel, you know.
You definitely saw that.
Okay.
Oh, so bad.
Okay. Let's see. Moving on. In preparing to reprise her role, Linda had to do a full year of physical fitness training and a strict carbohydrate-free diet leading up to her filming. And that was under the supervision of renowned fitness trainer Mackie Shilstone, known for his continuous research into fitness for aging athletes.
Huh.
And he had a team of like 10 people that covered various aspects of her conditioning that had to be constantly part of the process.
So it took 11 people to turn her back into Sarah Connor for that.
Yes.
That's awesome.
So, but, and she did it. So great.
Massive kudos, man.
And her, I mean, physically, her performance was fantastic.
Oh.
I was super happy with
it. I'm saving my commentary on that one.
Okay. You were mentioning the really seeing Mackenzie Davis. She was really naked in the scene when she fought.
The first one, yeah.
The costume department offered Davis flesh-colored underwear, and she declined to use them.
Huh.
She wanted to do the sequence naked for its authenticity, apparently.
Oh, more power to her.
She just gained, like, so many points on my scale.
So she worked real hard to put her body into a shape where she could deal with doing a naked fight scene in the opening sequence of the movie.
Nice.
I was looking for stuff that I thought was really worth mentioning. I mentioned Cameron. He was involved in the movie's writing, but he didn't didn't interfere with Tim Miller's direction and never visited the set. But after the filming was done, he apparently felt that the rough cut of the movie needed some editing and kind of stepped in there, which I guess started some rather bitter issues between him and director Tim Miller, and Tim's kind of gone on record saying he's never planning to work with Cameron again. But I've heard before that James is kind of a control freak, and this isn't our first James Cameron movie, right? I think he did The Abyss. So.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that, yeah.
And remember what we heard about all the actors of The Abyss talk about what a horrible time. Of course, part of that was the environment, but part of it was also
James Cameron. Yeah.
Really? I heard things went swimmingly.
Oh, you're bad.
Such a bad movie.
Let's see. I
know, they were treading water.
it sunk for me.
That entire conversation is going under.
Yes.
Blub, blub.
Just keep going. Just keep it up. It's all good. This is all B-roll like material at this point.
Going to make it into the clip.
In the early phase of development, Miller invited a group of sci-fi writers to brainstorm ideas for the movie. That was kind of cool. The group included Greg Bear, Neal Stephenson.
Oh. There's a couple of
names. Neil Asher, Warren Ellis, and Joe Abercrombie. And apparently Abercrombie came up with the idea of a human soldier who's surgically enhanced to be stronger but requires a lot of medication to deal with the enhancements, which later developed, of course, into Grace's character, or Mackenzie's character, Grace. You know what I mean?
I appreciated that was consistent through the movie.
Yeah, that was neat.
I was watching for it.
It was a cool premise.
So was I.
It was a cool premise. I liked everything about her character pretty much, so yeah. It felt pretty good through the movie, including her end, including the way that part of the story went. Let's see. There were some additional shots, I guess, of Eddie Furlong. He was having a brief conversation with Sarah, but those are cut because the de-aging visual effects were not, quote, up to snuff in those shots. So Cameron made sure they were cut. And a lot of people apparently took issue with the fact that John Connor died like 2 seconds into the movie, kind of like setting the tone.
Who would that bother?
Yeah, right. And I mean, this is particularly interesting since Cameron has always voiced his dislike of how the characters, you know, how Hicks and Newt from Aliens were unceremoniously killed off at the beginning of, what, Alien 3? And, I mean, that's one of those things that people have talked about, especially Newt. Everybody always talks about it's like, well, that movie could have been better if they hadn't just, you know, she went through all the trouble of saving Newt.
Right.
Right.
Right. And doesn't even get a... Oh, it's funny. I was actually going to make a reference to Alien 3 earlier in this podcast because when you were doing the IMDb blurb for this, I was going to comment that I saw the definitely award-winning blurb of any I've ever seen at the beginning of Alien 3, which blurb said, "Weird and scary events occur."
Nice.
You're kidding. Is that all that it says?
That's it. That's the entire thing. Weird and scary events occur.
Again, it's how much they pay the writers.
Fair enough.
Sounds like my work. Cameron has since stated that he himself suggested the shocking twist of John Connor getting killed early on in order to kind of pull the rug out from underneath the entire construct that's been going on for the last 3 decades, Terminator. So
good job.
I mean, really, if Skynet's not going to be the bad guy, it's good to draw the focus to the do good guy.
Let's talk about the all or nothing problem here.
Shall we?
So this is a really great expression of that, because in previous Terminator movies, there was a lot of the kind of undoing of things anyway, because somebody would come back in time and change things before other things happened. In fact, all the way to where the movie that shall not be named did this to the very beginning of the story, and had the whole scene with Sarah at the beginning of the Terminator, you know, go differently with Kyle going back in time. Just, yeah, I can't entirely disagree on that one. I did enjoy the movie, but I hated the ending. So
I didn't like anything about it.
Despite all that, though, I feel like if you're going to try to create some sort of momentum with your franchise, I can't help but think that it's a misstep to entirely invalidate everything. And here, what we've done is we've taken this to the point where we stopped Skynet, so humans still did the thing that they were going to do to cause Skynet and caused another one instead a little later. All the sacrifices we made early on didn't matter anymore. Everything had been invalidated. And the premise of that is to set up where we are now by making Sarah Connor a broken person who then has to deal with failures she didn't even know were failures when this all happens. You know, it's all obviously intentional, but that kind of all or nothing kind of flavor, that trope is exhausting so many levels. And if this hadn't been a 3-hour action movie in 2 hours and 8 minutes, that might have drugged me down a bit.
Yeah.
True.
But it definitely did with some portion of the fan base. I mean, there's no...
Yeah.
They burned their credibility with a substantial group of people.
A 3-hour action movie in 2 hours and 8 minutes? Is that what you said?
Non-stop freaking action. Every time I looked up at a sequence going on, I was like, oh, this looks like a climax. They must be approaching the end of the movie. Let me look. 1 hour and 15 minutes left. Oh, this must be the climax. 42 minutes left. I mean, they had the bad guy in their face.
The entire time.
For like 20 solid minutes of airtime.
And it was that constant movement that I enjoyed, because I never tuned out this movie.
Right, it didn't get boring. I didn't find it getting boring.
You consider, I watched 1 and 2, and I hold those dear. And I got into the Sarah Connor Chronicles a little bit, and then faltered out, but didn't really follow the timeline. And I truly enjoy Dark Fate the perspective of, I watched 1 and 2. I'm not mad with how this fits into that world.
I like that feedback. That's pretty solid. I feel like that's the one where a lot of the fans probably agree.
Mm-hmm. Terminator like Dark Fate.
Yes.
2019.
Jason was not one of these.
We're all talking about the same movie.
It is, right? Yeah. I hope so. I mean, it's the one. It was your homework, sir.
Mackenzie Davis rocking my world.
Okay. Just making sure that what I'm hearing is all talking about the same movie.
Something tells me I know who has the different opinion.
Yeah, I think we're pretty clear on where things fall.
I often have the lower score. I understand this. I average one full star lower than everybody else on the general maths of it. I looked it up to see how negative I was.
Wow. How does it make you feel?
I feel like you guys are just cream puffs to the movies and be nice to them.
Wow.
I don't feel bad at all.
We have been pastried.
I feel like I can't understand how you enjoy movies, sir.
I do enjoy movies, and I've enjoyed several movies. I've got a full range.
There have been at least 3 movies since we started this podcast that I have loved.
My most popular rating is 3, which is a good movie.
Sure.
I have had more good movies than I have had not good movies as far as the total number of ratings.
And that is accurate.
Which is why I built the stats.
We kind of knew where this was going to land going in, though, too.
But
it wasn't a huge. I mean, it's a surprise how much that's been the case. It's been a surprise to me how much, honestly, the jokes aside, it's been a surprise to me how many 4.5, 5-star ratings I've given. But I also have had a lot to do with the decision-making about what movies we're rolling.
True.
That's, you guys haven't stepped in and put a lot in there. I just make sure you guys are cool with the choices for the most part, and make sure we have a schedule moving forward. And I try to pick a variety. I try to go different places.
You're great.
I know some of the movies we pick are going to be unpopular. That is the point. I want content,
and I don't mind being the voice of that. It's just,
I know you don't.
There are times when I expect, okay, I'm going to be a little bit lower than the rest of the guys. And there are other times I'm like, okay, surely this one was just so bad that I'm not going to be alone on this one. And then I hear this kind of conversation going, and I'm like, oh my God, this isn't the one. This is not the one
I'd have been surprised if you felt like this was going to be the one, though. I mean, it's, for one, it's an action. It's a sci-fi action movie, and the effects were great.
Most of the time. Not all the time.
There are some exceptions.
There's somebody over here that is a little more critical about this than I am.
There was some really bad green screen.
I don't care.
I don't.
I was not ever taken out of it.
But I blinder my green screen.
Is it a case of I don't care, or is it a case of I didn't notice?
Whatever.
There was one that genuinely took me out, and it's when they were on the top of the train, and
dude,
and she was standing on the corner as she was going off, and I was just like, holy crap, you can tell they're not moving.
And I loved that shot. That's so funny.
It was so badly done.
Like, the callback, you talked about the callback earlier. I honestly, the first time I heard it, is like, wow, that was early in the movie and a little cheap. And then when I heard the second callback, I was like, are we really just going to trounce into this and lean heavy into that? I did not care for the callback.
I thought it was fine. I thought it was necessary. That's actually, I think, where I stand, where I fell on that. It didn't matter what my opinion was going to be at that point, because I think the fans would expect it.
Well, and even when she did it, I was like, okay, I can forgive that, because he did say that to her, and it's something in her head when she's running around doing, or not her, I don't remember.
The original line, I was in the police station.
He said it to the police, and then he killed them. So
it's a complete.
Nobody actually lived who witnessed that line.
It's entirely fan service.
Except maybe he said it in Terminator 2 to her at some point. Well, that was a callback to the first. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah. Like, this is too.
Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Yeah, I know. You're not wrong. You're not
and
right.
Then doing it twice just
none of us
killed
are
it.
That's the beauty of it.
I feel like the fan service, though, was heavily expected because it had been 30 years. You know, there was just kind of no way around it. People wanted those callbacks.
This was a nostalgia machine. There's no question about it.
Which Terminator is. There's no reason we should have kept having these stupid movies.
For the stupid ones, I agree with you.
I totally agree with
this. This franchise should have died after Terminator 2, in all honesty.
But yes, it came back.
Now, I enjoyed the shit out of this movie.
I thought that's how we got aging actors to continue into their retirement.
Which is great. Which is great. But even to say that, I would have been great with the Terminator franchise that had Terminator, Terminator 2, and Terminator Dark Fate 28 years later. I was fine with that.
Those are the only ones that exist. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't remember what you're talking about.
There is a time and a place for aging retired action adventure movies.
And The Expendables is pretty much that place.
It's The Expendables and Red.
And Red,
but
yes.
This is The Expendables.
Red was nice.
That's the point. And Red. I love it.
Oh, but Red was brilliant.
Red was so
and,
good. Red
and as we move on, it's going to be the Fast and Furious franchise as it gets into the teens.
Fast and Furious 347.
I haven't watched a single one of those, and I'm not upset.
I haven't
at
either.
Two.
I haven't missed one.
I've never seen any of them.
You always call yourself movie fan.
I haven't missed one, and I don't regret a single one.
I do call myself
a movie fan.
I
saw the first one, and then I saw the second one and went, oh, it's the same thing as the first one. And then I saw them announce a third one. I was just like, nope, I'm done.
Did you see the leak for the title of the next one?
Was it real?
Fast 10 Your Seatbelts?
I doubt it. Doubt that's real.
I don't care. It makes me chuckle.
I wouldn't actually go see it, but I would almost think about it for that.
I would say I don't believe it, but on the other hand, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah.
That's the part that bugs me.
As much as I love Vin Diesel and his meme-ness and nerdness, I can see him getting on the internet and seeing that and going, let's do it. Let's just do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's put out Fast 10-year seatbelts and just make everybody's head explode.
I don't know if that'll be the title, but I could totally see that being the tagline.
The tagline, yeah.
You know, I really feel like I didn't appreciate the Fast and the Furious construct until, because I liked the first movie when it came out, and it was Point Break. with cars. I loved Point Break and I didn't care about surfing. Why should I care about the cars in Fast and Furious? It just was.
Oh, I love the cars. They have some great music.
Rick Ocasek's gone now, but yeah, that's fair. But the Fast and the Furious franchise, when Vin started to describe it in terms of his relationship with Dungeons and Dragons, I started to get it.
That kind of made it personal.
Yeah.
It was about family. It was about brotherhood. It was about love. And it was about, you know, epic stories of things you did together as a party.
I get that. But when I say I'm not into car movies, I mean, I also never watched Transformers.
Did you ever watch Cars?
I was sitting here.
I did not watch Cars.
Fast and the Furious Transformers crossover.
What kind of question is that? Fast and the Oops.
All right, Terminator, Dark Fate.
No. Only the really good movies keep us from tangenting. Remember, that's the rule. Let's play some clips. Let's start with a little backstory.
There once was a future in which humankind was hunted by a machine that could think, and Terminators built to kill. A future without hope. That future never happened, because I stopped it. To protect my son, and to save us all.
Little setup there. And then, I mean, the clip I played at the opening was actually kind of the next thing, obviously. Yeah, just a little bit of backstory kind of establishing where
we're at. If you hadn't seen the first two, you needed to know this information.
That would be weird. But, you know, then again, probably not that out there. There's probably plenty of people that saw this that had never seen the previous movies because they were so long ago.
For the record, I had seen them.
I was going to say, there are plenty of people who saw this who weren't alive when the first ones came out. So.
Yeah, that's true. The first one came out in 84.
I wasn't alive for that one, but I have seen it.
Yeah, that's good. Keeping a spot. Oh.
Please, Mr. Grumman. It's my brother.
But Danny, he ain't you.
What's next? 3,000 people out there. What happens if I tell them they're just keeping a spot warm for some machine?
This is kind of a classic sci-fi kind of approach to a construct, right?
Foreshadowing. Mm-hmm.
Foreshadowing.
Well, you know, in an odd way, right? Because it's foreshadowing for something, one, we already know. It's a Terminator movie. So it's like, when it's stuck here, you're not really foreshadowing in the thing. I wonder if that's going to come to mean something later.
Like, no, I know that means something.
It's actually referential.
There were a few points of foreshadowing in that one, though.
It's a foreshadowing that she is going to be the stand-up. What if I told 3,000 people?
I didn't think about that. That's a good point.
It's
good
making her the boss.
Also, he ain't you. He wasn't the one that mattered.
Right. Yeah. You guys read some stuff in that. I didn't even catch that. You're right. Absolutely.
There is a lot of female empowerment built into the theme of this movie that hasn't really existed in the Terminator franchise before this.
Yeah, that would be the decade.
Oh, yeah. Obviously. This was very much a...
And I love it.
Empowerment film.
And that comment also, though, in that one little scene, that 20 seconds of audio I just played, it's also, of course, the comment on our society, which, I mean, Skynet was already a version of that on a larger scale, the whole thing where we are, as we barrel towards technology replacing ourselves, you know, when technology becomes aware, fear of the singularity, all that. But this was even kind of a nod to what we're dealing with right now. Ooh. In the world of automation. Mm-hmm. Taking jobs away from people and changing the texture of our workforce.
So the bigger lesson is, it may not be Skynet. It may not be this other group. But Legion? Something could happen. Yeah, I can't Legion.
Legion?
The word, like, I just, what it takes what a me to choice. A different movie. I don't.
I had that issue as
not,
well.
Not every time I heard Legion, I'm like, what? Huh?
We are Legion.
No.
I even every time they said the name, saw it with numbers in place of the vowels.
I know.
Wow. Okay. That's fair. Come with me if you want to live.
That is not your father. That is a machine that was sent here to kill you.
Hey, go!
Come with me or you're dead in the next 30 seconds. Come on!
She said it.
Yeah, she totally messed up the line.
That was really good.
They still had to make it their own.
No, fan service. If you're going to play all back. The fan service that they play in this movie, she should have said, come with me if you want to live.
No, I think changing it was intentional, obviously.
It was
that
intentional.
That was exactly the kind wrong. Of thing they were doing. You know, that whole of saying it their own way was a way of nodding towards the original line, which everybody knows.
The fan service was all done by the original actors for the most part, if not exclusively.
Yeah, the newbies didn't get to do any fan service. That's fair. They haven't paid their dues.
I'd say at least the ones that I noticed were the original actors.
On the other hand, I have to point out that the entire naked fight was kind of fan service, and she's a complete newbie to this franchise. So
that's true, but she didn't have any lines in it.
That's true. That's true.
When he came crashing through, by the way, I thought this was an interesting bit of trivia. When Gabriel Luna, when the Rev 9 came crashing through the shed at that barbecue, remember that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And crashing through the sky and then gets, and walks out and says, sorry about the shed or whatever, which I thought was a great line, very deadpan, very good. The music that's playing in the background was Dwight Yoakam's Guitars and Cadillacs, which is the exact song that was playing in the bar when Arnie went into the bar in T2 and roughed him up.
I missed that.
I just thought that was great.
That is a beautiful callback.
I knew there was something about the song, but I couldn't place what it was.
It was perfect. I thought it was beautiful. Let's see. Augmented.
Please. Tell us what that thing is.
It's a Terminator. A Rev 9. He was sent here from the future. I must too. Get in. Get in. Ah. Now where?
You're a machine too?
No, I'm human. Thank you.
But your arm.
I'm augmented.
Augmented?
Augmented? I like Diego.
She's too not stupid. She's advanced.
Yep. Well, I liked her concept. I really liked Grace
so much.
That's a fun character.
That was the coolest addition, because they're always trying to find, it's actually one of the failings of the series, right? They're always trying to find new ways to make the Terminator scary. Because when they did that with Terminator 2, they did it so well, even though they were using, you know, mercury floating across stone to do the effects for the most part. It was so cool that they had provided us a Terminator that was so much more badass than the original Terminator.
So let's talk about the Rev 9. This was, hands down, the scariest Terminator we have seen. Sarah Connor Chronicles included. It was amazing. And the stuff they decided to do with it all just made that better. The scene when he's driving after them and she throws the things and impales him and he flows up and forms on the hood just gave me chills. It was so perfectly done.
That was such an awesome power.
You know, I honestly expected that to happen differently, though. Whenever they showed him doing that, it had this kind of static, kind of like 3D construct kind of effect.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything kind of like stands still while it does the flowing over to here and then building this shape and this shape. Which I didn't necessarily feel unrealistic for what it was or anything. But I expect with today's cinematography and effects that what we're going to get instead is something where the camera's in motion and things happen too fast for you to really see what's happening and the thing's in motion as it forms.
At the very last one in the dam, he was. He was already getting up and starting to walk even before he finished coming together. But that was the only time I remember catching that.
I still think it's kind of cool because I think they were all made in June because they're all Gemini.
Oh, wow.
He's like, I paused for that.
He's his own best friend.
And the endoskeleton was black.
Yes.
The liquid was black. It was black liquid instead of chrome this time.
Oh, so cool. And you know, it's her like interior. Those are shiny parts.
Yeah.
You know,
the mesh. But that was just subdermal armor.
Right. But they made everything with her shiny and they made everything with him
black.
Right. So freaking
white hat,
cool.
Black hat in the modern era.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a
which
good
was
call.
A nice nod.
It
I
was.
Liked it.
I did too.
He was neat. I liked everything about the Rev 9. I thought he was cool.
Yes.
Yes, I really appreciate it.
And some of his lines were fantastic.
Speaking of the lines we shouldn't speak of. I love the effects, the sounds.
I'll be back.
I just had to catch it.
Yeah.
I loved that was her introductory line, though. That's what made us think. And the way it rolled off.
The delivery, yeah.
It was one of her best delivered lines in the movie because it flipped off so casual. Yeah, I'll be back. And it's kind of cock the gun and turn around.
Right, right.
And then they kind of invert it because they steal her car.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I still appreciated the fact that at the very beginning of the movie, when the Rev 9 and Grace are getting into the world, the Rev 9 was the one being polite and social until he had to kill somebody because that was what he had to do to take the
programming
image.
Right. Yeah.
And Grace was just like, no, get out of my way. I have a job to do and you are in the way. Get Get Out.
Which is also another great way to illustrate the difference between a person with a particular job they have in mind, but still have all the social constructs in the head of a person in some level, and a machine that has just a purpose.
Right. Because she was adrenaline driven, and he had a job to do, and he needed to do whatever it took to get the job done.
Just like one of the things I always thought was so scary and kind of dangerous about the Terminators as a concept is that whenever they went to kill somebody, they weren't worried about witnesses. Mm-hmm. They weren't worried about collateral damage. You know, none of that. Their whole job is to kill this lady here. And so every moment that they're doing anything else is focused on that one goal.
Yep.
And I felt like they showcased that better in this movie than they ever had before.
Yes.
Because there are two or three points when it just becomes obvious. It doesn't matter how she dies. It doesn't matter if he's the one who kills her. She just has to be dead.
Right.
And he wins.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, Robert Patrick's portrayal of the T-1000 was pretty menacing.
Yeah.
But it always felt like it was done up for the effect because it was the drama they were building with the character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more so than Arnie's, 1984 Terminator because, let's face it, Arnie could barely speak English at the time, which worked.
He didn't speak a lot in that movie, so it's fine.
Yeah, and then he came back in 92 and he's like, I need your car, your motorcycle, your pants, whatever. Oh, I love the bit where he picks up the shades.
The sunglasses, yeah. And it cues the theme. It cues the theme. Dun, 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 dun. And then he sets them down.
Which, in my opinion, is a callback to the horrible scene in Terminator 3 where he puts on the Elton John sunglasses just for the sake of having sunglasses.
I don't remember that. I'm so glad I blocked that from my mind.
Yeah, I could have went without remembering it.
But now that you say it, I love the picture it puts in my head, so I'm fine.
They're pink, star-shaped sunglasses.
Beautiful!
I do remember that. Okay.
I don't remember that.
I did, too.
He's getting ready to go out and about, and he looks down, and he sees the sunglasses, and he picks them up, and he does the
thing. Yep.
And so this time it's like, yeah, no, I'm fine without sunglasses.
By the way, just as a note, and I should have mentioned earlier, because I know that with a lot of this, music was a very common element in every sequence.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes the music is kind of loud, and there's also other sound effects going on. I try not to catch a lot of, super loud clips, because it could be annoying to us to try to deal with that. But there may be places where I know that they do some of the droning, not, all the way through the movie, like some movies obviously do. But, Jason, you specifically talked about that before.
Yeah, it's fine in little bits. I didn't notice anything in this one.
But I did notice it jumped at me in a couple of the clips. So I was going to mention, if you decide to take your headphones off, please don't throw them across the room or anything. I'll understand what's
happening. It's not that fast.
Steal my truck.
I save your ass, then you steal my truck. Nice. Never mind. It's burnt. What's wrong with her?
I don't know. She's sick or something.
Well, I need answers from you two. So let's get her in the car. Give me that before you hurt yourself.
Just some classic, Sarah Connor going on here. I was down with that.
That gave us a good base point for where the character was starting versus how she ended, too, and I liked that.
And I enjoyed the fact that next sequence involved her interacting with Danny while Grace was out.
Mm-hmm.
It created kind of a cool element to that relationship as it was building. So I thought the writing was pretty clever in places. So when it came to trying to build character, and I didn't feel like it dragged, but opinions vary.
Yeah.
A little nod to the big brother, right?
Interview's over. We gotta move.
We? There is no we. Danny's with me. It's my mission to protect her.
Oh, yeah? How's that working out for you? Clearly you don't know everything about this time. How anyone with a phone is a walking sensor platform. How every intersection, every gas station and 7-Eleven has cameras. Nobody walks through this world without leaving a digital trail a mile wide.
Digital trail a mile wide.
7-Eleven isn't a gas station everywhere. Some places it's a convenience store.
I thought convenience stores were always gas stations.
You don't know
here.
Oh,
in Kansas, yes.
Dude, no,
we
not
had
anymore.
A really weird
and we
moment.
Even have a few here that aren't. Yeah.
Are they still convenient?
Yes.
We drove up to, now I knew, because we went took a trip to Portland not too long ago. And I have always, growing up in Kansas, guys, if you're listening to this, convenience stores and gas stations are the same thing here.
Yes.
By and large, almost every place you go that sells gas almost also has a convenience store attached, and vice versa. If you're going to pick up a soda or candy bars, you're going to a gas station.
It's rare, but you are more likely to find a gas station without a convenience store. I haven't seen a convenience store without a gas station. They just told me they exist, and I was like, really?
Well, we drove across country and to Portland. Now, I know in Oregon, the one thing that I found out a couple years ago, and people that might be in that part of the country listening, this is going to go, really? You didn't know this?
They're laughing. At us.
They self-service is unusual. You pull up to pumps and they pump your gas. So almost everywhere we went, we had that thing. And my brother was, I was like, do we tip? And they're not expecting it. I mean, they're paid for. It's like, okay. So if you're listening and that's wrong, you feel free to let me know, I guess. But it was weird. Not only that, but then it was weird to notice that, and it kind of makes sense in a world where when you pull up to get gas, you don't even have to get out of your car most of the time. None of the gas stations were convenience stores. I found one the whole time we were in Portland, and it looked like it was new.
Wow.
Everywhere we went, if we went to a convenience store, it didn't sell gas.
It used to be illegal to pump your own gas in Oregon. It recently changed, right. So that it's
Oregon
not illegal.
That's the only reason.
Is New Jersey still illegal to pump your own gas?
I don't know about New Jersey.
The only reason I know
that was
about
the only other state.
Oregon is because I paid attention when it came from the news a couple years ago with what you're talking about, yeah. Right there when they changed the law on it. And see, people were freaking out on the internet, like, what? Oh, yeah. Now I got to learn to pump my own gas. I'm sitting here going, when I was 12.
At the risk of dating myself, the earliest memories I have, the gas stations had two separate islands. There was full service and self-service, and you bought your gas in leaded or unleaded.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
No, she wouldn't. Leaded gas.
Was it regular?
It wasn't called regular.
It wasn't called regular and unleaded.
I was trying to remember what it was called, yeah.
Now they try to call original? Unleaded, low grade, whatever, as regular, and it confuses me still because I'm like, I don't put regular gas in.
They brought back leaded gasoline.
Original and extra crispy. It was, I'm trying to just see in my head, I was trying to remember what they called regular gasoline.
I like extra spicy.
Right, extra spicy gas.
Colonel's secret recipe.
You're secretly a Transformer, aren't you?
Maybe that's why I don't like car movies.
They just never quite get it right.
It's the affront to my very nature.
So that's an odd one to me. That's a really odd one to me, but it's probably, you know, a lot more common in other places, not in the Midwest. I don't know. I mean, you know, most of the driving I've done in my life has been
around
this part
of the
country.
Kansas isn't the entirety of the Midwest either.
But. No, but I've driven through Missouri and Oklahoma and Texas. I mean, we've driven around the Midwest. That's not true.
We don't need two separate buildings here for gas stations and convenience stores because we don't need more targets for the tornadoes.
Well, I remember also in California when I was there, they had gas stations that were owned by one place and convenience stores that were a different store, but they were still in the same parking lot.
That's interesting. And it's possible. Cool. And of course, the exception, one of the exceptions is for travel plazas, of course.
Yeah.
But the same kind of thing, right? It's a different business, usually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
it's super common in California, I think.
I think it was strange to me, though. It was definitely strange to me. I felt like if I was going to go get, I mean, because I didn't need gas that often or anything, but if I was going to go get something, I always look for the gas pumps. Mm-hmm. That's how you recognize a store that sells, you know, soft drinks. I don't know. But then again, like the people that had the gas pumps, you know, maybe they were also like shops, did brakes, oil changes, things like that. I mean, whatever.
Well, and was the other thing I was going to say is full service didn't just mean they pumped your gas for you. They'd check your oil. They'd wipe your windshields.
Right.
Check
then
your tires.
Then the gas pump turned into a Terminator and told you it came from the future to destroy you because you're going to save mankind.
The Terminators are really bad about that. They don't usually actually clue in their victims why they're there or what they're doing.
The victims, yeah.
I know, that's but true. The victims are dying to know.
Then we had Carl. When Carl came into the movie got better. I didn't expect that.
Carl.
I thought it was good before that, too. So.
No, I did, too. I just don't usually expect something like Arnie playing a Terminator to elevate the movie, I guess.
I didn't. Okay, I agree to disagree.
Most of his payoff in like Terminator 2 was in one-liners.
That's true.
You know, one-liners. He's an action guy, so he had great one-liners. He had a little bit of dialogue with her, a little bit of dialogue with the kid where he's doing exposition, but most of it was just one-liners.
Oh.
So I didn't expect to have this huge kind of character arc built into him at this point, even though I'd seen the movie once before, I'd kind of forgotten about this stuff.
Sorry, that just reminded me of one of the other things I got a kick out of when she's telling Danny, you put 100 cops between yourself and a Terminator, you get 100 dead cops. And I'm like, ask her how she knows.
Right.
Good point.
That's like when she asked for the cell phone. The first thing Justin says, it's about to go out the window. The cell phone, whoop, right out the window.
She asked so nicely. It's like, yeah. It's Like, why didn't you just throw it into a potato chip bag?
Yeah, I was gonna like,
she pulled her phone out of a potato chip bag,
and I'm like, you don't get to do that.
She was obviously doing it to be mean. Oh, Carl's fate.
It's a Terminator.
And we are fighting a Terminator. One that we can't stop.
Do you believe in fate, Sierra? Or do you believe that we all can change the future every second by every choice that we make? You chose to change the future. You chose to destroy Skynet. You set me free. And now I'm going to help you protect the girl. Because I choose to.
That's deep, man.
It's Alicia. She needs my help with the groceries.
I loved it.
That was kind of awesome.
He was the heart of the movie, and that was so weird.
Yeah.
How does she not notice you're a 400-pound?
Yeah, I think I may have got that
Our
line,
relationship
too.
Is not physical.
You don't say.
I'm
glad he made that point, though, because it was kind of creeping me out a little.
The kid did for a second until they explained that she already had the kid, and I was like, wait a second.
Better now. Right, that was kind of a gimme, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Half Terminator.
He wasn't fathering children, I'm pretty sure.
I'll be around.
You talked about adapting.
Right? How functional is that organic sheath he's in?
That would have been beyond the pale. That would have been the one where people went, this is a dumb movie.
Leaving now. Bye.
Fortunately, the writers probably felt the same.
That would have been the moment.
That's definitely where I would have broken.
Yeah, that would have killed me.
Here we go.
So you're Carl.
That's what everyone calls me, yes.
I'm never gonna fucking call you Carl.
Ba-ding.
Foreshadowing.
No.
She hasn't noticed that you weigh 400 pounds? That you never sleep?
Our relationship is not physical. She appreciated that I could change diapers efficiently and without any complaints. I'm reliable. I'm a very good listener. And I'm extremely funny.
That made me laugh.
It's okay. It made me picture a Terminator changing diapers.
That was
which
the point.
Also made me laugh.
Yeah.
Dun 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 dun. Dun dun
dun dun. Hey, I've seen some diapers that I've seen some diapers that deserve that music. I'm just
the little red squiggly lines. Warning! 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 Warning!
Extreme biohazard.
You can see it all through the red film of his eyes, right?
Target acquired.
It's like thermal vision, so he's like...
although the advantage of being able to use that system to duck when the inevitable stream comes at you in the middle of the change.
Right.
Yeah.
You have a son. You know what I'm talking about.
So if you are not really in tune with the franchise, and maybe even if you are and haven't really paid attention to the undertones, one of the major themes that was really being developed in Terminator 2 was the question of fate, which is a really great question to explore in a time travel epic where what you're fighting is the future in a lot of ways. So are we fated to do this thing? Do we have any real control over our destiny, or is everything going to roll out the way it will and there's nothing we can do to change it? And then, of course, the end of Terminator 2 was a decision that, yes, the hell, we can change it. She scrawled into the picnic table, no fate, with the tip of her knife.
No fate, but what we mean.
It was a huge theme that was being developed in the movie, but it was a subtle one. It was understated because it wasn't part of the action economy of the film. It was a theme that sat underneath the whole thing and guided it. So here we approach the question of fate again. And we don't do it till halfway through the movie because up to that point, all we're dealing with is this new situation with this new lady being chased for these new bad guys. It's just the rehashing the same thing. When she asked why Sarah was helping her, she says, because I was her, you know.
And it sucks.
It's very relatable. It was really well done in that way. But this is the point at which that came up, and I just kind of wanted to highlight it a little bit because I feel like the theme was still very strongly prevalent and developed, even if it wasn't really called into question much, because the denouement in this film didn't really fight that particular idiom. You know, it was like the original Terminator. It was more of a dealing with this inevitable machine problem, not like Terminator 2, where we are dealing with the inevitableness of the future and what it means. because they were trying to stop it from happening. And this one was more like the first movie. We weren't trying to stop it from happening. We were trying to preserve what was going to happen, which is a different message. Anyway, I just thought it was kind of cool that he had an opinion. I liked this one, too. More Carl. I like Carl. I got plenty of Carl.
You just keep this around?
Even without a rogue AI taking over, I calculated a 74% chance that human civilization will collapse into barbarism. In the dead eventuality, these weapons will be vital to protect my family. Also, this is Texas.
Best line in the movie.
I will challenge that.
Okay.
The best line in the movie was when he was talking to the major about draperies.
Oh, here it is.
Good call.
Segue.
Just picking the right color. It's the texture, the weight of the material. One wrong choice.
You okay?
It can destroy the look of the entire room.
Fine.
There was this one customer that came to me. He wanted to have solid colored drapes in the little girl's room. I said, don't do it. You need butterflies, polka dots, balloons.
Okay, I'll give that one to you. I forgot about that line.
Don't do it.
The best part is that part right there was improvised by Arnie. The butterflies, polka dots, balloons, that was all him.
That was great.
Yeah.
I'll give that one to you. That's the best line.
I could decide. I had to pull them both. So there you go.
I'm okay with that.
No fate.
You turn scavengers into militias and militias into an army. We rose up out of the ashes and we took our world back. You taught us there is no fate but what we make for ourselves. Danny, you are not the mother of some man who saves the future. You are the future. That's why Legion wants you dead. She's John.
I saw that one coming a million miles away.
No pressure.
Yeah. I felt it was a little too heavily.
Especially when she made a big issue over how you are going to be the mother of the blah, blah, blah.
As soon as she said that, I was like, nope.
Yeah, you're me. Oh, no, wait. You're not me. I just didn't see
you're
that.
You're not me. You're John.
Yeah.
It coming.
I liked it as a change in that texture a little bit, but it was kind of heavily telegraphed. Let's see. And I have one more clip. You look terrible. Because I wanted music.
You look terrible.
At least I still have all my face.
Left is on the plane.
I can't get through that door.
I like it.
Nothing that happened in the movie had the emotional impact on me that the music did.
That's just that's part and parcel for the franchise, though. That's part of what you have to do. It's as much a moral callback than anything else.
I know. Well, and I mean, I had a cassette that I had recorded the Terminator music on because I couldn't go out and buy a soundtrack or anything back then. I had no income. I had no money stream. And I would just sit there and listen to the music from that movie on my cassette and be happy. So it is a massive nostalgia piece for me. The fact that they brought it back for this was just incredibly moving.
Yeah. I got this.
Wait a minute. That wasn't a clip.
That was indeed a clip. It is called Thumbs Up, Thumbs Down. Rich?
Okay, well, on my thumbs up, because my thumbs up is so much more relevant than my thumbs down, my thumbs up is Mackenzie Davis and Grace. Just, she kept me in the movie the whole time, and I really appreciate that. On my thumbs down, I honestly think I'm going to go with, to me, there was just so much fan. I got tired of it. Just doing the callback in two different ways in the same movie was just a bit too much for me. But you know what? It's all right. I mean, at the end of the day, after having watched the first two movies years ago, following back with this, with a change in the world, with the good effects and the interesting character development and the roles of the characters playing in modern sensibilities. I really did enjoy the movie, and I've been bouncing between 4 and 5 even right up until this moment, and I am going to give it a 4.5. I can't, it's not one of my favorite movies, but it is more than a 4, and the only reason I'm going over a 4 is because Mackenzie Davis.
And I get that too, that very, I can think of movies that I would say are really, really great movies that should be watched that are still not favorites of mine. I get that, you know, that's not really hard to follow, but I think that's a fair review of the best and worst, best and bad, I don't know, good and bad, I guess. We haven't gotten to the worst yet. So. not speaking of which, Vanessa.
Fair enough. I'd say the only thumbs down that I could find in the entire movie was there was some green screening that broke my immersion. I was still able to get sucked right back into it, and I loved the story and everything. So that said, thumbs up, loved the story, loved the acting. It had a good continuity. Everything flowed well, in my opinion. I think I broke Jason.
Don't look over there. Don't look over there. It's okay.
I'm giving it 5 stars.
He's making faces just to throw you off.
I think I threw him off.
We all threw him off, but that was at the beginning of the show. Jason, what do you think? You got a rebuttal?
I think somewhere, think somehow, podcast? There was a different movie broadcast to my home. I really do. Everything I disliked about this film, everybody else has already praised. For example, the timing, it was slow, it was boring, it was monotonous. Even the action scenes slugged from one crawling punch to the next. I wanted to go to sleep so many times. I watched an hour of the movie and it had only been 20 minutes. So then I watched another hour of the movie and it had only been 10. It was so long. It was a 10-hour movie packed into a 2-hour time slot, but it took me all 10 hours to watch it. I did not like the story. I thought that killing John killed everything. I thought that it's like, okay, yes, so there's a new place. That it's not Skynet. It's something else exactly like Skynet, and they still make Terminators, and they still call them Terminators. There were so many things that were so hard to believe. And I have no issue with the female empowerment, but I didn't see her as a leader. Even in the scene where she did the whole leadery thing, she didn't feel like a leader to me. Grace felt like a leader to me.
I would say I actually felt kind of similarly at that moment. It was kind of in looking back at it that I've kind of reviewed my opinion, but at the very end, when she shows down against the bad guy and she's the only one up, that was the moment I felt her character transformation was really visible.
The story did not set, the movie did not set, the timing was, and I just couldn't wait for it to be over. I was looking at the ratings system recently and how Richard qualifies things and the little text next to each secret rating. And there was only one that applied. Why did you make me watch this film?
Oh, no.
0 stars. I will never watch this again. And it made me not want to see the others that I did enjoy previously. It killed Terminator for me.
Wow.
Ow. Well, that's a hard take.
I won't make you watch any Terminator movies.
Got it. Are you sure you didn't watch that other one we didn't mention? We still aren't mentioning.
I'm pretty sure because it had Grace and it had the girl.
Okay.
It just, I did not enjoy this
now
movie.
I would like you to go watch Terminator Genesis and give me a review.
Okay.
Because if you can come up with...
You got homework.
I want to see if you can come up with less than a 0-star rating. I'm just really curious.
Like, Genesis is why I didn't watch this one before now.
Well, it automatically gets half a star because it's got Matt Smith in it.
That doesn't work that way. I guess it does.
Wow. You might not.
It might
that
get canceled out
it.
By other stuff.
you might not
but
feel that way.
It's guaranteed at least half a star.
So I just to make sure it's on record, I apologize.
No, you don't have to apologize for anything. Apparently, this one's on me. I'm totally taking that. This one's on me.
I hadn't anticipated. I had expected it's possible that you might be bothered by things about the movie because we've now talked about enough movies now for me to get a sense of some of the things that bother you. I had obviously not expected that reaction, and you can see from the reaction of everybody else in the room how much I wouldn't have expected that reaction.
Absolutely. I've been the entire podcast. I've been listening to everybody go saying the things that they're saying. And I'm like, did I miss something? Am I overlooking? Am I being too hard on it? And I'm like, do I need to change my review just a little?
I on chemical substances at the time?
No, I don't need to change my review. This is my review. And
so if this movie had been shot underwater, would you have had a negative score?
Oh.
All the red lights.
Lights in water.
So this is the movie that broke Exhibition Street.
It's Exposition Street. Thank you.
I'm sorry. I'll pull those back up. I'm sorry.
All right. Kid, you've been very patient.
Yeah, now I don't want to say anything.
I don't blame you.
Say what you feel.
It's in your contract.
About the movie.
We've never had such an extreme break between the panel before. I don't know how I feel.
You're not rating the panel. You're rating the movie.
Wait, can I?
I give this movie 4 stars. The panel, I'm going to give 2.5 right now.
I will say that as a nostalgia vehicle, this movie had a huge impact on me. And I'm gonna wax a little bit here, so please bear with me. And if you have to cut this out, that's fine.
No, you're fine.
One of my most strongly felt movies of all time was Tron. And when they came out after so long, the sequel to it, Tron Legacy, I couldn't have been more excited. And I watched the movie. And on a very visceral level, it left me hugely disappointed. And I realized why later, because the soundtrack for Tron Legacy gets a lot of credit. Daft Punk did an incredible job. The music was great, but it had nothing, not the slightest trace of the music from the original movie. And it turns out that the music from the original movie was a huge part of my emotional attachment to it. And divorcing from that entirely with the sequel left me cold. So in this, and I had already touched on it, when they brought back the music from Terminator 2, the theme so strongly and powerfully, it reconnected me to the emotional experience that I had from those original movies from decades ago when I was a completely different person and getting a completely different experience out of my entertainment. And that is powerful. It plugged me back into things that I felt years and years and years ago, and that is powerful. It was huge for me. So my first and biggest thumbs up has to go to the music. Being able to get back to something from that long ago, for me especially, because my memory doesn't work like the rest of yours does, it's a thing. So that was huge. Any movie that has people fighting naked automatically gets an endorsement from me. I don't care about the gender of the fighters. People fighting naked is a major excitement, thrill thing for me. It's not even sexual. It's just a thing I really admire and appreciate. So kudos. The Rev 9, I touched on the coolest concept that they have put into a Terminator. I loved its double nature, the double threat factor. If anything, I was disappointed that it didn't seem to make full use of the advantages that could have given it. But I chalked that up to programming error and we'll let it go. It was fantastic. I loved it. Grace, the augmented freedom fighter from the future, I felt really kind of separated us from John Connor's army, gave us a new feel. And in the future flashbacks that we saw them fighting against the flying bombs and everything else, the tentacle hentai monsters, it was so phenomenal. Such a powerful capture of such a creative vision. Sarah Connor and the Terminator, the T-800's performances, Arnold and
Linda's
performances in this were my favorite of either of them's in the entire franchise.
Which, to be fair, they're both much better actors now.
Yes, and it showed. It paid off. They delivered on that. Some of the plot twists, like they go through all the trouble to get the EMPs only for them to discover that they've been shot up and are now useless. Those little whiplash moments were fantastic for me. And for those, I forgave a lot of the other plot things that otherwise left me a little bit wobbly.
I loved how creative some of those fight sequences were, too.
Yes.
The swinging the chain around incredible. And stuff.
Oh, man.
And that entire last fight inside the dam. Mm-hmm. But for all of that, I have to say the fight inside the plane has to be one of the best action sequences in the entire franchise, hands down. It was brilliantly executed. And they did just an incredible job of taking into account what a fight in that kind of environment in free fall inside a changing, falling apart plane. It was so perfectly put together. I have never seen an action sequence in a Terminator movie that was anywhere near as exciting and thrilling for me. All of that together, those are my thumbs ups.
Oh, is that what we're doing?
Yeah. Now my thumbs down.
Wax off.
I didn't have a problem with the way that they kind of tried to unpaint themselves out of the time travel-y corner they'd painted themselves into, but I did have a problem with, and now I don't, I lost the phrase I was going to, I had a perfect way to, damn it, this happens to me. So let's just say I had a different take on how they tried to solve the dilemma of the paradox issue, and it felt to me like they could have, you know what? I got nothing.
No?
I got nothing.
You know, the thing that bugs me the most about that time travel issue I was talking about is that it's they could have come up with a different way.
That's more or less where I was going.
It was kind of paradoxy.
They could have come up with, because the only thing that doesn't fit with the original kind of paradigm, as far as I can tell in my head, is the whole thing with, okay, the Terminator showing up and killing John Connor because he hadn't gotten the message. So we've changed the future, but we still have what the future did back here, which that part, I guess, is consistent, right? What has already happened has happened, even if it hasn't happened yet, because everything has happened. But if
you
everything has happened...
You end up with an effect without a cause.
No, that's the problem. If everything has happened, then John couldn't have been killed, because John had already... I mean, that was why the original loop with Kyle made sense, because he was fulfilling the prophecy of John Connor, which had been what sent him back. And it just occurred to me when you were talking that Grace is Kyle Reese. That's the role that she fills in this, and I hadn't actually put it that way in
my
head.
Except she's not here to get anyone pregnant.
Right, but she's here to promote the future of the person that she cares about.
To create the Danny who saved
her. If she hadn't given her the little speech.
Right, John was Kyle's friend, and he sent Kyle back. Even John knew Kyle was his dad, but Kyle didn't know. He sent Kyle back, and then Kyle, Michael Biehn, met Sarah Connor and fathered a John. Yeah, so it's like that was its own
created
thing.
The John that sent him back.
Shortens the loop because she was kind of raised by Danny and then went back and saved Danny. So obviously, she didn't have to go back too far because, you know.
Oh, and can we talk about chronal displacement putting waves that can be detected ahead of time?
Again. And here we have a future that has now been undone, but we're still having the Terminators pop up intermittently. And now he's seeing Terminators that are from this new future because, of course, it's the same sort of time travel displacement,
and
right?
We still don't have anything that explains how Danny had the coordinates tattooed on Grace that led to Arnie.
Right, because that
an artifact from a completely different future dystopia.
Except it does make sense as long as you then subscribe back to the original continuity issue of since Danny knew where
to
find him in Laredo.
Danny tattooed the coordinates.
Because she'd already met Grace, and then she sends Grace back.
Because that had happened. Because it hadn't happened.
So those two events, the Kyle Reese going back in time and John Connor being born and then going and then sending back, that's internally consistent. And then what happened between Danny and Grace is internally consistent. The stuff in the middle that is the excuse for Sarah Connor to keep on fighting and the reason to have Carl exist at all is the stuff that doesn't work. They could have come up with a better way. Something. They could have come up with something, but they didn't. So
even having her fighting alongside John.
And by the way, the only thing that bugged me about that with with Legion sending back Terminators and stuff, because I don't even know if they ever, she may be the only one who even called them a Terminator. I don't remember. But
Grace called them Terminators.
Okay. But they still looked, the endoskeletons still looked like the ones that Skynet had developed.
Except they had that cool truncated skull thing.
Yeah, similar.
Yeah, they had hollow heads.
Similar, though.
But that makes sense, because otherwise the pneumatic metal portion of them would be completely hollow. It needs to have some internal structure, so there have to be holes in the endoskeleton for it to fill.
Right, that's true.
One could argue, if I'm going to be an apologist for the
why, Jason? You don't do this to yourself. Your head's going to explode.
I love putting them in this position.
But if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it right. The AI is looking for the most efficient killing method of humans.
So I'll assume it comes with the same solution.
It came up with the same solution that the other AI did.
Yeah.
And the next AI will, because they'll stop this one, and then another AI will pop up.
It might even be the same AI.
They just called itself Legion just instead
developed,
of Skynet.
Exactly. Developed so many years later into Legion instead of
Actually,
Skynet.
Actually, if this is based on the singularity model, then you might be onto something there. It doesn't matter if you have different humans doing the project, if you have different approaches to building it.
Now we're overthinking it.
No.
Now we're going outside the bounds.
Welcome to being a nerd.
But it does make sense. The idea would be that there is a single most efficient solution. And no matter where you start from, you're going to end up at that single most efficient solution, and it will always have these same properties.
And so whether it's Ultron or Skynet or
Legion,
what have you,
yeah,
you're always going to end up with Sokovia in the air.
It's not a bad trope. It's just jarring. Yeah, you're always going to end up with Sokovia in the air. Wow, let's not do that movie.
Where does that put your?
Excuse me. Yeah, give us a rating.
Thoughts on the movie?
I have to give it 4.5 stars.
Two stars. No, I'm joking. 5 stars, Rich.
Nobody
even laughed.
I smiled. You just can't see
laughing
that
under the
inside.
That puts us at 3.75, even with the zero heavily dragging it down. It still is running at a better than good movie.
It's probably pretty representative of the people's reactions to it. Right
pretty
there.
Much where I put it when Vanessa was going to go watch it, I said, did you see the first and second Terminator? She's like, a long time ago. I said, you're good.
Right. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
That's pretty much where it's at.
Yeah, that's the same boat most of us were in.
What do we got next week, Vanessa?
Practical Magic.
Boot!
Nicole Kidman.
And Sandy Bullock. That'll be fun. All right, make sure and watch it before you join us next week. Thank you very much for being part of the show today. I invite you once again to drop us a line, feedback@prismatictsunami.com, if you'd like to recommend a movie. Please do. And again, go ahead and get on out of here. Everybody, we'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Eric. For Richard, for Vanessa, for Jason and the kid, have a great week. We'll see you then. That'll be back.